Welcome on the Verge. This is Zach Spedden, joined as always by Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens. And we have a lot to get into on tonight's show, including a preview of the Orioles' looming 40-man roster decisions in regard to the Rule 5 draft. Several interesting prospects are eligible for the Rule 5 draft this year, but with limited 40-man roster spots available to them, the Orioles are going to have to make some tough decisions. We'll get into that, as well as a look at award season. Mike Elias is your MLB Executive of the Year, and he might not be the only Oriole to claim prizes here over the next week. But we'll start off the show, as we like to do with a lot of our episodes, and welcome a new member of our Patreon community. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Bob and his daughter, who has joined us for this show.
If Mike Elias can win Executive of the Year, can I win Dad of the Year? Bring it here. We have a new patron this week. Edward Healy is in, single A. Might be from a foreign country, international prospect, young guy. Let's see if he can move up through the farm system. But in all seriousness, wow, good burp. Welcome aboard, Edward. Thanks for supporting the show.
As a reminder, you can sign up for the paid versions of our Patreon community for as little as $3 a month and have access to an exclusive WhatsApp group. And then at the $5 and $10 levels, you will get more perks, including bonus daily content, as well as some off-season content that we're going to sprinkle in throughout the next few months. We'll, of course, have a daily countdown of top 50 prospects later in the off-season. We'll have more for our patrons between now and then. As for tonight's show, we're going to start off with one of the bigger stories in Birdland this week, which is Mike Elias has been named MLB's Executive of the Year. The award was announced on Tuesday. Elias received the award, which is voted on by the 30 teams in MLB. This iteration of the award is an official prize from MLB and has only existed since 2018. Elias is the first Orioles executive to win the award. He beat out Alex Anthopoulos of the Braves, who was runner-up, and Mike Hazen of the Diamondbacks, who came in third for the award. So, Nick, I'll start here. We've been covering the evolution of this organization for a few years now. Elias plays a big part in that. I don't think his winning the award is a particularly big surprise given the Orioles' surges this year, but what are your thoughts on it?
I think it's pretty cool just because it's an award voted on by his peers. So clearly, like, the rest of the league acknowledges what the Orioles are doing and respect the work that's being done in Baltimore under Elias. So I think that's good to see. Also, the Elias haters are down pretty bad with this announcement. So that's even better to see. He's made some decisions and maybe some comments that haven't been super popular with some fans, but at the same time, my only real gripe has been maybe the lack of spending in free agency the last couple of years, but that maybe is not a decision that he was solely responsible for. So can't really put all that blame on him. He's brought in some guys who have made a real impact in the clubhouse. He's has a vision of what this organization, what he wants his organization to be, what kind of team he wants on the field. And he hasn't wavered from that. He's got a fantastic team around him, a culture in this organization from the Dominican Summer League up to the big league clubhouse and everywhere in between. They've drafted well, extremely well. They've got the top farm system in baseball. They have an unbelievable player development staff in place. And, now it's open up the checkbook. Let's pull some trades and, the window's open. And now if I was a rest of the league, I'd be scared to see what the Orioles can do now when they open up the checkbook and start making some trades, because they're coming off a 101 win season with, a roster that wasn't expected to get what did Vegas have them at 70 something wins? It's kudos to Mike Elias. There's still a lot more work to be done, but the rest of the league, they see what's coming.
Yeah, I think a lot of fans would probably want to hear if they spend money, but it'd be hard not to spend more money at this point. So yeah, and I'll get to the actual award, but I just like what we've heard so far from Elias this offseason. I think the plan is sound. He wants to add one legit top of the rotation starter and a legit back end of the bullpen reliever. And then, of course, he made the necessary, can't guarantee anything, but this is what we're aiming for. Could be something a little bit less than that. Doesn't sound like they're focusing on offense much this offseason, but we'll see what happens. But yeah, the award, it's almost like this is like an award that just is encompassing his time here since he took over. It's kind of just reflects the rebuild as a general and as a whole. I feel like he's probably done a better job, if you really want to say, like, the job of being the GM and making the moves to got us here. Probably would have got the award a couple of years ago, but you know, it's kind of like manager of the year. It's an expectations versus results type of thing. And yeah, happy for him, deserving. I mean, I think the Braves GM also, that makes sense that he's the runner up. Great GM there, gets his players to sign extensions for cheap. Would love to see that be the next step for the Orioles, but yeah, well-deserved award, and maybe not the last one that he has as an Oriole.
Definitely should be, and I think that one of the strengths you have to give Elias credit for is just up and down this organization is so strong. 101 wins at the major league level, doing so while playing the toughest division in baseball. And what is still considered, despite the quantity and quality of graduations over the last two seasons or so, one of the top farm systems in baseball.
Well, yeah. Unless you ask Baseball Savant and their new metric, I think they were like 12th or something on that, but we won't get into that. But yeah, we won 101 games at the major league level, and then AAA, obviously they won it all. They won the International League. I think they had a record number of wins for the Tides, and then even beat the PCL team for the championship of the championship. So yeah, I think everything's looking good.
Well, and Elias will have to make some decisions here next week with the Orioles Rule 5 decisions coming up, the deadline to protect players from the Rule 5 draft by giving them a 40-man roster spot is next week. And that's something that we know that he and the front office, I'm sure, put a lot of thought into.
They've got magic minds over there, so let's hear about it.
Yeah, the Orioles do have a few tough decisions to make with their 40-man roster and Rule 5 eligible players, but it's not a tough decision, guys. And that has been starting every morning with a boost from Magic Mind. We've been talking about these Magic Mind energy boosting shots for a couple of weeks now. I've gotten hooked on them and love being able to start my day knowing that what I'm consuming will give me not just the energy I need for a full day, but also give me the peace of mind that I'm not consuming harmful chemicals or processed garbage first thing in the morning. I drink my Magic Mind shots each morning before my cup of coffee, and I can tell you from personal experience that these drinks work. To be completely honest, I was skeptical and wasn't expecting anything, but that afternoon drag is gone since I've started drinking Magic Mind each morning. Haven't gone for the afternoon coffee in weeks now. I feel awake in the afternoons. Overall, just feel more refreshed and energized throughout the day. It's been especially helpful this week now that it's pitch black outside by like 5:30, and it typically takes me weeks to adjust to the time change and the early sunsets and resisting that urge to go to bed by 6 p.m. But it's been business as usual now that I'm drinking Magic Mind each day, to be honest. And you know, the best part is that I really do look forward to drinking these every morning. It's made of all natural ingredients, including matcha, lion's mane mushrooms, other ingredients designed to improve your memory, give you that natural energy boost and stress less. No sugar, nut-free. It's also vegan, keto, paleo-friendly. Like, trust me, if I'm sitting here saying that I like drinking these, it's good because you can ask my wife. I'm probably the pickiest person she's ever met when it comes to what I consume, but I do love the taste of Magic Mind. And you can try Magic Mind for yourself by going to magicmind.com/verge. It's magicmind.com/VERGE. Use our code VERGE20, that's the number 20, where you can save up to 56% on a subscription to Magic Mind or get 20% off a one-time order. If you are already a subscriber, you can still go to magicmind.com/verge, use the code VERGE20, and get the discount on your next subscription payment. We're only running this because I stand by the product after personally using it. My wife's hooked. She signed us up for a subscription, so a monthly supply automatically comes to our house. Something else that's really cool with this product is Magic Mind does come with 100% money-back guarantee. Zero questions asked, so there's no risk whatsoever. Give it a try today. Start feeling refreshed immediately. Go to magicmind.com/verge with our discount code VERGE20 for up to 56% off a subscription. I'd get the 30-pack. That's what I subscribe to. And that's great value and great product. And we'll put the direct link in our show notes so you can all go order yours today and let us know what you think.
Now that we're refreshed, we'll discuss this Rule 5 deadline, which is next week. It'll be November 15th, to be exact. By our count right now, the Orioles have two open spots on their 40-man roster. And the class of players this year that are Rule 5 eligible is not as strong as we have seen in prior offseason. That's largely because a lot of the big-name players forced the Orioles' hands this year. Jordan Westberg and Heston Kerstad both would have been Rule 5 eligible this offseason for the first time. However, both of them earned promotions to the Major League roster and 40-man roster spots during the regular season. So this class does not have the Grayson Rodriguez, D.L. Hall type prospect that we have seen in previous years. Nonetheless, it is still deep, especially on the pitching side. The first guy that I want to talk about, though, is the one position player who could conceivably be protected, and that is Hudson Haskin. Haskin, who was chosen by the Orioles out of Tulane in the second round of the 2020 draft, was limited to just 33 games last year because of injury. The bulk of that time was spent at Norfolk, where he put up solid numbers in 23 games, but his production really has been solid in the minor leagues, but staying on the field has been a little bit of an issue for him over the years. Bob, I'll start with you on this one. The Orioles are deep at outfield, yet it feels like Haskin is the kind of player who could conceivably be chosen in the Rule 5 draft because just solid across the board with his skill set. So what are your thoughts on his case?
If I could first go back and say, I think Gunnar Henderson actually would be, this would be the year he would have been protected as well as Darryl Hernaez. And obviously Gunnar's been up for over a year and Hernaez was traded to the A's and looks like he'll be on the opening day roster for Oakland. Excited to see that. But yeah, Hudson Haskin, definitely if he's not protected, I can make the case either way. He was kind of like a borderline decision for me when I was looking at this list. I could see, I think he will get picked in the Rule 5 draft if he's not protected, just because he's got speed and defense, a high floor right there, and he can be the last guy on your bench, a late defensive replacement as he tries to get adjusted to the major leagues. And he also, which is a positive and a negative, I feel like a team that picks him, he tends to get hurt a lot. He gets hit by a lot of pitches, and he's been injured each of the past two seasons. So that's another way I guess a team could try to hide him on the roster. I know you have to make up that time to a certain extent, but yeah, he's a very valuable player in that he's kind of like a Ryan McKenna with more upside, I feel like. And actually that's one way I think the Orioles could add him to the 40-man is if Ryan McKenna gets non-tendered because he's going to get a little bit of a raise, not much, and he's out of options. They could easily just replace him with Hudson Haskin right then and there. But otherwise, you know, he can hit for some power. He does a little bit of everything. I don't want to say he's like a five-tool player, but he's like slightly above average to slightly below average at everything, except for defense is pretty solid. But yeah, I think he's a very safe player that would probably be picked in a Rule 5 draft if he's not protected.
Yeah, this is a tough one. It's definitely the only hitter, like you mentioned, Zach, that I think we'll probably talk about here. I mean, there's really no one else. Maverick Hanley, T.T. Bowens, Greg Cullen, Isaac De Leon, Servideo. Like, I don't think any of these guys are up for consideration. So it's really just Haskin on the hitter front. And I'm torn as well. I think if you'd poll most fans, they'd probably say that Haskin being added is probably like a lock or a slam dunk. And I don't think that's the case, just because a lot of the reasons that Bob outlined were good and bad. First of all, I think that, and as I talk this out in my head, I go back and forth too, but you know, they did invest a lot in him. He is the second round pick, like you mentioned, out of Tulane, so 39th overall. And despite like every report on him after the draft, talking about, you know, if you overhaul that swing, you know, how high is his ceiling? Well, how good of a prospect could it be if you overhaul that swing? And it's like, there have been adjustments, but it's still pretty much that same swing for the most part. And it seems like based on the few interviews that Haskin has done, he kind of enjoys proving people wrong and showing them that this swing works. And I do love that. But I also think that there's still a long way for him to go to get there. But I think every day, or mostly every day, major league regular is within his range of outcomes as far as his development goes. He's not going to get there next year. And if he does reach that point, more realistically, I do think I like the, you know, Ryan McKenna, but better comp. I do think he's that fourth outfield type. And as a reason that you would protect him, he's probably that fourth outfield type that would fit very well in Baltimore because he plays a good center field defense and you can move him over to left field there at Baltimore if you need him to. I think that's a huge bonus for him, knowing what this organization likes. As for the bat, I think he does strike out a good bit, but he gets on base at a good clip. I think he can probably be a 10 to 15 home run guy in the major leagues. give you like 30 plus doubles a year in the major league level. The stolen bases haven't really been there for him. I know that first year he had like 20 plus stolen bases, and they haven't been there since. This was a guy who stole George Springer's high school record. They both went to the same high school. He broke George Springer's stolen base record. Haven't seen it yet, but I think he'd get there. The injuries, like Bob mentioned, I think that's a big issue, because that first year it was a broken thumb. So, you know, that's just an unfortunate injury. But this past season, it was the hamstring, then he came back, and then he re-aggravated the hamstring, and then he came back, and then it was hip surgery that ended up shutting him down for the year, and only playing 33 games. So he's got limited time in AAA, less than 33 games, 82 at-bats at the AAA level, coming off multiple hamstring injuries and hip surgery. You wonder, like, yeah, maybe you can manipulate his roster status and keep him around, but, or you could just go with somebody that you know is fully healthy. So I don't know. Like, I think you could probably sit here and gamble by keeping him off, honestly, because if you look at the roster as it is right now, we could project trades and DFAs and all that, and that's going to take us down multiple rabbit holes. But you've got Hayes, Mullins, Santander, Kowser, Kerstad, Stowers, Vavra. Like, they're all on the 40-man already. I think you could probably risk, risk keeping him exposed, to be honest. But at the same time, I wouldn't be shocked if maybe Haskin is a guy that maybe there's a trade out there. If you say, hey, we do really want to keep him, but we just can't, but he's a good player. Maybe they find a trade partner for him. All three options, I think, are pretty viable and could go either way, to be honest.
Yeah. When I look at Haskins' case, I think that if he had had a healthy 2023, this would be a slam dunk, that he would be protected because he just does a little bit of everything. I don't think he's got that one tool that really jumps out at you as, you know, this is going to make him a surefire big leaguer. He doesn't have Ryan McKenna's speed, and we can get into the comparisons between him and McKenna in a minute. But the injuries are something that would concern me, and especially with what Nick mentioned with hamstring and hip issues. The fact that he only has 82 at-bats at AAA, you would have to really, I think if you're another organization that's looking at Haskin, you would have to figure out, number one, what is your outfield depth? We know there's probably a lot of teams picking at the top of the Rule 5 draft that don't have a lot of outfield depth. But then beyond that, is he going to be healthy, and can you get enough of a sample size over the course of 2024 to figure out exactly what you have? I think that if Haskin does stay healthy, you're looking at worst at a high floor bench player, but there's a wide range of outcomes here. And honestly, there always has been with him.
It's a good point. Yeah. And ultimately the reason why I lean that I don't think he's going to be protected when the deadline approaches is like Nick said. I mean, you still got Kyle Stowers, Taron Vavra. They just picked up Sam Hilliard. And if you can pick up a guy like that who can play all three outfield positions and has some offensive upside as well, even though he's approaching 30 years old, I mean, even if they really wanted to, could they bring back Daz Cameron, and how much of a difference would Hudson Haskin versus Daz Cameron make? So I think they're going to take the risk. And we know this organization, they love, like we say, where's Joey Ortiz? They want to get these guys, these AAA at-bats. Yeah, they will push them up to AAA, but then they want them to get seasoned at that level. And I don't think Haskin's near enough there for the Orioles liking to make him like an everyday part of their rotation at the major league level. So I think they will be confident that he will come back to them, whether it's by not getting picked or by ultimately coming back at some point during the season. But yeah, I mean, it could go either way. There's obviously many reasons why that could happen, but that's the one I'm definitely most intrigued by, what happens next Wednesday. And for the pitchers, as we'll get to obviously soon, there's a lot of ways that could go as well. A lot of guys that could be potentially protected or not. And if they're not, I could see them going. Obviously, that's what we're about to get into.
I do want to bring up one last point about McKenna, because this is a question we've gotten a lot covering this show. Haskin. Well, I'll bring up a point about Haskin for a minute. We're asked a lot, what is the difference between Hudson Haskin and Ryan McKenna? And could Haskin possibly be better than McKenna? Now, I just want to point out scheduling here that the non-tender deadline is actually 2 days after the deadline to protect players of the 40-man roster spot. That doesn't mean, though, that the Orioles couldn't decide to protect McKenna one day and then 2 days later decide they're going to – or protect Haskin one day and decide 2 days later that they're going to non-tender McKenna, or figuring that McKenna is not going to cost them a whole lot, keep both of them for a little while, and then open a 40-man roster spot later on in the offseason by DFAing an outfielder. So, Nick, I'll start with you on this one. What's the separator between Haskin and McKenna?
I think they do have a lot of similarities, like offensively, in terms of like walk rate, strikeout rate. I think Haskin probably ends up being putting up pretty similar numbers to McKenna, probably average as well. I mean, you look at McKenna's numbers this year, he hit 254, 316 on base percentage, and 90 WRC plus. I think Haskin can probably, you know, be league average hitter, maybe even slightly above league average. I do think as a hitter, he's got more power. The 15 home runs he hit in Bowie, I don't think they were completely, and I know what, three or four of them came in that one game. I think it was three he had in one game, but still, I don't think that was all just like Bowie is easy to hit home runs at. I think what I was watching early on when, at Norfolk, was that he was showing some of that power in Norfolk as well early on in the season before he got hurt. So that was a positive sign. The bats always kind of impressed me. It kind of exceeded what I thought it was going to be at every level. I do think there's legitimate power in the bat. Like I said, probably 10 to 15 home runs a year. But yeah, he's going to strike out a good bit. He's not going to walk a ton, I don't think, at the big league level. And defensively, like, he can cover all three spots. So I think the separator there is maybe just more power and maybe a little bit higher floor. But
yeah, they are very similar, the more I think about it. But yeah, see, they're already interchangeable in our mind. You made the mistake multiple times, Zach, and I'm like, which one is it again? McKenna, Haskin? Yeah, Haskin, he's got that opposite field power. I think on that three-homer day, they were all to right field, right center field. So if he can turn on the ball more often and still keep that opposite field power, maybe he could even be like a 20 homer a year guy. I don't know. That I think that's in there somewhere. I don't know if it'll ever be unlocked, but I think he'll get on base more than McKenna, and not from walks. I think legitimately getting hit by pitches is a weapon he has. He consistently gets hit by pitches quite a bit. So yeah, I mean, I think it's very Haskin has three options and McKenna has zero. I think that's what gives Haskin the edge.
We're going to dive into the pitcher's side of this. And while you don't have that guy that projects as a possible frontline starter, this is still a pretty solid group. You have a few first-time eligible guys, but what really makes the pitcher part of this equation interesting is the guys who are coming back from injury that were actually Rule 5 eligible last year. Two of them are Kyle Bronowitz and Zach Peake. And then a third is a guy that I think we're going to be talking about a lot tonight. Someone the Orioles actually got last year because in the Rule 5 draft in the minor league phase because he was coming off an injury, and that's Trey Mugel. And just to give some quick background on Mugel, he had been in the Pirates system but then had Tommy John surgery early in the 2022 season while pitching at AAA Indianapolis. The Pirates chose to not protect him. The Orioles ultimately chose him in the minor league phase of the Rule 5 draft. He was back on the mound before the end of the season and put together a very nice stint in the Arizona Fall League and had a nice showcase over the weekend by pitching a scoreless inning in the AFL Fall Stars game. So, Bob, I'll start with you here. Let's look at Mugel specifically for a minute. A few months ago, I don't think he was on our radar as someone the Orioles might protect, but now we're actually having a legitimate discussion about him. What does that say about his development in the last few months?
Yeah, really. I lean towards he will be protected. He's really shown off well at the AFL. He was in the AFL All-Star game. His numbers look really good over there. I mean, maybe that's to showcase him, and maybe he could be part of a trade at some point, but I think he'll be added to the 40-man before that would happen anyway. But yeah, I think it's just a fact that he had this upside. I think we knew that when he was picked in the Rule 5 of the minor league phase of the Rule 5 last year, but the injury was a big question mark, and he was able to come back and pitch some really solid innings at the end of the season here in the minor leagues. And And yeah, he's got good stuff. He locates well. He strike guys out, but doesn't walk too many. I think he's a lefty. I think there's just a lot to like. And he could be a starter, or he could be a really nice multi-inning lefty reliever as well. So yeah, I think he impressed enough to really push himself ahead of a lot of guys as far as I think the organization sees him. And I'm very curious to see what they do. It was telling enough that they sent him out to the Arizona Fall League. There was a few guys that I could have seen going out there that needed to catch up on some innings, but he was one of them, and he showed out so far.
Yeah, I actually did some more reading about Magoo earlier today. Some cool little nuggets there, but I actually think it was Zach that made a comment a couple of weeks ago. I don't know what episode it was or what we were talking about, but you said something about keeping our eye on Trey Magoo or having a good conversation about Magoo when we get to this point. And that stuck with me, and I thought about it more and more. And honestly, like I agree with Bob that I think Magoo does get protected, and he's the one that the more casual fans are going to be at and be like, who is that? Where did he come from? Well, like you said, he's got the Orioles picked him in last year's minor league phase Rule 5 draft, knowing that he had just had Tommy John surgery. So they knew he was going to miss pretty much all year and be Rule 5 eligible again. Obviously, he was in AAA with the Pirates before his surgery, didn't pitch a ton in Indianapolis, but he did make 8 appearances there and pitched pretty well. So clearly the Orioles were high on him to grab him when he was hurt, rehab him their way, and have him ready to go full go in 2024. But there's actually an interesting side note when I was reading about him. Hockey was his top sport, and he was supposed to go to Canada for a big tournament. But like all of his teammates bailed for whatever reason. And his parents were like, we're not spending all that money to go to Canada for you to play in this hockey tournament. We'll just wait until like the big national tournament. And he got a call that was like, hey, I need a pitcher. Can you come pitch for me this weekend at this tournament? And he walked away from that tournament with an offer from Mount St. Mary's, Maryland's local Maryland school there, to pitch for them. And so that's led him to Mount St. Mary's and now in the Orioles organization. So I thought that was pretty cool. But yeah, he's a 6'3 lefty who throws in the mid-90s. And if you look at some of his grades from pre-injury, I mean, he was like 50-55 grade fastball, slider, changeup across the board. And that Fangraphs report that had on him last year, he was like the 59th ranked prospect in the Pirate system. But still, they were kind of bullish on him, saying, look, he could be an up-and-down starter type with good command. And if you look at the Orioles organization right now, kind of combing through the roster a little bit there, and again, not trying to project too much about who gets DFA'd or non-tendered or traded or anything like that. But I mean, you've got, hopefully Keegan Aiken is non-tendered. I know I said we didn't want to dive into that, but hopefully he's non-tendered. Cole Irvin probably ends up in that similar role next year as he served this year, probably. We know what the org thinks about Nick Vespi and what his role is. Bruce Zimmerman is still there, but you know exactly what you have in Bruce Zimmerman. It's kind of that extremely low, I think, ceiling option. And then you got Cade Povich and Luis Gonzalez are the only lefty options on Norfolk's roster right now. Povich is in his own tier, and Gonzalez is, you know, a 30-something depth relief arm. I think Magoo is that lefty who can give you good innings and potentially be a starter, could fill a pretty important role for you if you add him to the 40-man.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was about to bring up that point. I want to focus it more specifically on the 2024 season, because someone who looks at Magoo's stats from this year may see that he only had 4 innings at Bowie, just 20 2/3 across the Orioles minor leagues when he came back from the injury. But it's important to notice that in 2021, he had 95 really good innings at Altoona. He put together a good run there in Pirates AA team. He was off to a good start, as Nick mentioned, at AAA the following year before he got hurt. And I would have to think that Arizona Fall League stint was basically an extension of Magoo's time at Bowie, where you're going to get a little bit more innings in, and next year you have a shot to make Norfolk's roster. And once he's on Norfolk's roster as a lefty, whether it's in the rotation or as a bulk innings reliever, he's one spot start, second game of a doubleheader where you can add a guy to your roster, one injury away from being in the major leagues. And he fills a role that right now is kind of filled by several different guys who I think have kind of run their course with the Orioles. I think the Orioles know what they have with them at this point. That's not to say they're all going to be gone next year, but they took Magoo for a reason last year. And I think that next year is going to be the opportunity to see exactly what that reason was.
Yeah, and Vivek mentions it in the comments. Bruce Zimmerman and Keegan Aiken are both out of options. And if we're talking about, or at least I was talking about, potentially Hudson Haskin replacing Ryan McKenna basically on the 40 because one's got options and one has the full deck. There you go. Trey Magoo could take one or both, not both of their spots, but at least one, if they're not both gone, one of them could be gone and replaced by Magoo, theoretically. And yeah, I think, you know, like you said, he could be that 27th man in a doubleheader where we saw that with D.L. Hall early last season before, you know, his season eventually went the way it went. But the guy that can come just give you some bulk when you need someone and then maybe work his way from there. So, yeah, very interesting.
Let's shift gears now and talk about Peak and Bronowitz. Both of them were Rule 5 eligible for the first time last year, but were coming off Tommy John surgery. The Orioles left them unprotected. Ultimately, neither of them were chosen, but both got back on the mound last year and had flashes of what made them successful. For Bronowitz, this is a right-hander who does not have an overpowering fastball by any stretch of the imagination, but an excellent knuckle curveball that is a legitimate out pitch, good command for all of his pitches, and someone that could profile as a very efficient back-end starter or a possible bulk innings guy out of your bullpen. Peak, meanwhile, I've considered him for a while to be one of the Orioles' most versatile pitchers in terms of what he might be able to do for you at the major league level. He flashes back-end starter stuff, but he also shows the ability to be possibly a middle innings guy out of the bullpen, but with the mentality of a late inning reliever and a guy who can flat get the stuff up there a little bit over short outings. I think both of them were hurt by the injury in 2022, and while we're not going to spend all of tonight trying to figure out what ifs, healthy, normal seasons from those guys in 2022 get them 40-man roster spots, most likely. We saw glimpses of that in 2023, and I'll start with Nick here. How do you think the Orioles are evaluating those two guys right now?
I think Peak, like a couple other guys, he doesn't need to be protected because he had just 45 innings at AA before the Tommy John surgery. Only 10 innings this year, and you know, he, like most people coming out from Tommy John surgery, the command wasn't there. So I think sending him out to the Arizona Fall League was great because it gives him a few extra innings to work on that command. You don't have to worry about, you know, a scout from another organization seeing his stuff and falling in love and pounding the table, going back to his org saying, we need to take Zach Peak. He's not going to stick on your major league roster. And I feel like with a lot of these guys, it's like, all right, how let's kind of dig at them. So like bring out all the bad in them, why they won't be taken by another team, but yet we also don't have to protect them. But like Peak, I say that, but Peak is still a guy who honestly, I think before the injury, he was taking that next step in his development. Like the strikeouts were down compared to what we saw in 2021 when he was one of the top strikeout arms in the system. But he was kind of following that path that we saw a lot of guys take this year in AA where the strikeouts go down. But I think the emphasis with the ABS system in place in AAA and possibly going up to the major leagues at some point in the near future, you really can't nibble around the edges as much. So I think it's the emphasis in AA has been to just attack that strike zone, attack guys head on, forget about the strikeout rate, because for a lot of these guys, it's going back up in AAA like we talked about before. I think Peak was on that trajectory before Tommy John hit. So luckily, he's in the AFL. He's healthy. He can, you know, come back next year, probably start in AA and hopefully get back on that track he was on. Bronowitz is a little different. This one I have a little iffy on. I could see them protecting him just because, you know, like you said, if he didn't get hurt, he would have been on the 40-man roster already, or at least been given a major league shot already. I guess it's what is his health status? Because when I'm thinking about it, he came back, he dominated in like a ball, working up to Aberdeen, 12 innings, one run allowed, two walks, 15 strikeouts. He got to Bowie and allowed 12 runs in 14 innings, didn't walk very many guys, but struck out 19, and then went back on the IL. So like, was there a setback? Was there something else that popped up? Or was it like just a John Means situation where it was just fatigue and they're like, let's just shut you down. We'll pick this back up a couple weeks in Sarasota. I'm hoping it was just fatigue, obviously. And this could be, if so, this could be a guy that you probably want to protect because, you know, the fastball, you mentioned the fastball velo is not there, but that double knuckle curve is your out weapon at the major league level. He's got excellent command. He's had that going back to his time at Elon in college. He's just enough like that funk hitch, little weird short arm thing he does in the delivery. I think he can keep hitters off balance if he's just facing them one time. I don't think he's a guy who's going to go through a major league lineup multiple times a year. But I do think this could be a guy that another organization looks at and says, yeah, we'll take a flyer on him and hope he's fully healthy next year. I kind of lean towards maybe protecting Branovich.
Yeah, ultimately, I don't think either one of Branovich or Peak will be protected, but not because the organization doesn't believe in them. I think it's just the lack of innings and coming back from injury. I don't know if a team is going to be willing to take that on and be able to keep them in the majors all year. This, you know, they did it with Zach Pop, but I feel like he was kind of already a short inning reliever, and there was a little more upside there as far as being valuable in the year that he was selected. For Branovich, yeah, it's like Nick said, he was came back, he looked great, struggled a little bit, went back on the AL, then I think he came back off of the injured list but didn't pitch, I believe. And yeah, I wonder what exactly is going on with him. I think both of them have a chance to make their major league debuts in 2024 with the Orioles if they're still here. I think probably as relievers, just because starting pitching depth has really gotten pretty strong here. And if they want a chance, I think the best shot would be out of the bullpen. And Peak, I'm almost glad he's struggled a little bit here since he's came back, because if he came back and was just lights out, then I think a very good chance he does get picked. Like Nick said, he was pulling a Justin Armbruster, whatever, you know, name the pitcher that went through AA on their way to AAA. And in 2022, before he got hurt, he was looking really good and just seemed to get better each time out before he got hurt. I think, you know, get the innings in, get a little bit of rest before getting reloaded for spring training. Hopefully he doesn't get picked. I think if he fully transitions to a bullpen role next year, I think he could really surprise some people with what he's able to do. But as far as being put on the 40-man, I just don't see it with these guys.
Before we shift over to three arms who are Rule 5 eligible for the first time, I do want to focus on a guy who was Rule 5 eligible last year and was not taken. And when you look at his stats from the 2022 season, you can kind of see why he was not taken. That's Garrett Stallings, who really struggled at Bowie, kind of an up-and-down season back in 2022, where I think it was in the month of May, where he was statistically probably the worst pitcher in the Orioles farm system. But then followed that up with an absolutely dominant June, and then the other months of the year were kind of erratic. Last year, the numbers overall don't look great, but he ended up being one of the more durable starters in the Orioles farm system, got to Norfolk, and I think you could say held his own in what was a really challenging environment for pitchers last year in the International League. And before we came on the air, Nick said that he thought we should talk about Garrett Stallings tonight. So I'm going to let Nick start this one out. What does Garrett Stallings' Rule 5 or 40-man roster case look like right now?
This is a tough one, too. I do think at least he's worthy of a conversation here, though. Like you said, maybe he's a fellow like Hampton Roads 757 guy. He grew up in Chesapeake. I grew up in Suffolk. I got love for the Hampton Roads guys. Maybe it's just a soft spot here, but I honestly do think he kind of made a case for himself this past year in Norfolk, because if the information that we were told was true, right, then this guy was done as an Oriole last year during that stretch that you mentioned, Zach. It wasn't just one of the worst like stat lines of someone in this organization. That was one of the worst months or so of pitching that I think I've ever seen by any pitcher in baseball, to be completely honest. It was awful. But apparently, at least what we heard, is that he had some major backers in this organization who pounded the table for him. He got one more shot, and he responded with one of the strongest stretches of pitching that we've seen from pretty much anyone in this system the last couple of years. Like 24 innings, 31 strikeouts, only two runs or three runs allowed. It was great. This year, once he got to AAA, like, he had a career high strikeout rate. He got the walk rate back down a bit. That was something that, going back to his high school days, he just did not walk guys. He got that back down, the home run rate was much more respectable this year. It was like over 2 per 9 in 2022. He got that down to 1.22 per nine in AAA. Like, this man was running ground ball rates like 50% and walking like 5% of batters or less, but 25-30% of the fly balls he allowed were leaving the ballpark. And we came on the show like how many times and we're like, what is going on? Like, how do you do that? Something's got to break in his favor. And I think it kind of did this past year. The ERA was what, 5.5, but you know, the FIP was 4.3 and the XFIP was 4.16. So that looks, you know, basically almost a run and a half better. He doesn't have the elite pitch, but he's got like 5 at least average to above average offerings. He's got really good command. I think the slider can be a good weapon for him in the big leagues. It as a one inning low leverage arm. And, you know, if the Orioles don't protect him, I would not be surprised. I could see someone else possibly taking a shot with him because, like you mentioned, he holds his own as far as innings go. He can give you multiple innings. And if there's one thing this organization does value, it's a guy who can eat innings. So I don't know. I think there's a bit of a conversation here.
Yeah, and his velocity was up, as Vivek says in the comments. I know that was a Baseball America thing where Peter Van Loon and Garrett Stallings, like, their velocity was ticking up in a big way. I think there was someone else in the Orioles, but he's kind of like Thomas Eshelman if he could throw hard. I think an Orioles team from 2019 to 2021, Garrett Stallings is a stud on this team, but not sure he's going to be added to the 40 man, but I could definitely see him get picked. I'm not sure. It could be like a Gray Fenter thing where he goes to the Cubs for a couple weeks to months and then comes back. Could be a good experience. I think he's a really, really solid guy to have hanging around AAA if you need someone to step up. I'm just not sure. I don't know. Yeah, he's worth talking about because great story. He's got decent stuff, great command, but I don't know.
Yeah, I could very easily see a scenario where Stallings is not protected on the 40-man roster just because of limited room and then taken by another team because he's a viable option as a fifth starter on a bad team. That's really what it comes down to. And if you're looking for extra arms in camp, here's a guy who held his own in a very challenging environment for pitchers last year. You know he can give you innings. You know he can keep the ball on the ground. And I think one of the keys for him last year was that his fastball improved remarkably. Not only because he was throwing it harder, but I think he was doing a much better job of using it to complement his off-speed stuff. Because I think that, Nick, you would point this out on the show. And this is in June of 2022 when he had that really bad month. And then July was when he kind of turned the page and was completely dominant. I remember you saying something that hitters just looked like they were feasting off his curveball. And that didn't really seem to be as much the case last year. It looked like that his repertoire was just a lot more balanced in that he didn't have that one pitch that if he missed by the slightest bit, hitters were going to pounce on it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have his game log pulled up. I just thought about this, like, how many games did he have this year too in AAA where he struck out like 8, 9, 10 plus guys? I mean, he had some really phenomenal starts in AAA this season. You know, I could very easily see why they would not protect him, but it's like Bob said a couple of years ago, yeah, he's protected and he's a guy who you're like, is he going to be a number 3 or number 4 starter for this team? I think it's at least, this makes this whole conversation and looking at this list, and we're kind of like, yeah, this list isn't that great this year. There's not that many guys to talk about. But at the same time, like, there are guys that 3 years ago were doing the show. It's slam dunk. It's a bunch of yep, yep, yep. Don't really know what else to say. Yep. And now it's like, these are good prospects or at least decent prospects. They're going to provide value to somebody somewhere. But is there room on the major league roster? And it makes all this at least more fun, if anything.
Yeah, and I do have his game log pulled up. And I remember thinking this, that he was very inconsistent, like all or nothing. He'd go out and have a great outing and then go out and get lit up. Just since he was promoted to AAA, He had a 6-inning appearance, 1 run, no walks, 9 strikeouts. Then he had a 2 starts later, 2 innings, gave up 6 runs. Then 8 innings, no earned runs, no walks, 9 strikeouts. Then 4 innings, gave up 8 runs. 4 innings, gave up 5 runs. 1 2/3 innings, gave up 8 runs. But then he had a 6-inning where start where he gave up 1 run, struck out 10. Then 7 innings, 1 run, struck out 7 to 1 walk. So, yeah, just very all or nothing. So if you could make the good ones more than the bad ones, or at least even them out somewhere where it's not as extreme, then maybe there's something there.
Or even home road splits when he was in AAA, because I feel like a lot of those even good outings were at home. He loved feasting back home in 757, maybe. I don't know. Maybe Baltimore needs to – maybe they do need to move down to Norfolk so Garrett Stallings can succeed. No. But, yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. Good story, like Bob said. It's a good story regardless where he ends up.
We'll go now to 3 pitchers that are Rule 5 eligible for the first time this offseason that we want to highlight tonight. And these guys all kind of have their own unique stories. And we'll start with Ryan Watson, who was the Orioles minor league pitcher of the year in 2022. He was with AAA Norfolk last year, and he was not quite as dominant at Norfolk as he had been across 3 levels in the minor leagues back in 2022, or multiple levels of the minor leagues back in 2022. Nonetheless, still managed to post good strikeout numbers in what was a very challenging environment for pitchers. Now, you've heard me mention that a few times now. I'll give a little bit more background. If you look at hitter statistics across the International League last year, most of them were up across the board. And a lot of the, you know, adding difficulty for pitchers this year was the automated ball strike zone was used more widely at AAA. You also had a talent system in place for balls and strikes. So kind of an unconventional year at AAA. Watson had his moments at Norfolk this year, but overall the stat line, 5.95 ERA and 87 2/3 innings pitched with 82 strikeouts against 46 walks. If you want to compare it to the year before, between Bowie and Norfolk, he threw 107 1/3 innings, striking on 108 batters while walking just 29. So command more of an issue for Watson last year than it had been the year before, but he still flashed good stuff at points. And Bob, I'll start with you here. When I look at Watson, I see a guy who's on the bubble as far as the Orioles are concerned, but that could be an intriguing bullpen option for another organization as they look through the Rule 5 options.
Yeah, I agree. His season was not as bad as it looks, and he kind of played a very important role for the Tides where he would start some games, he would come in relief some games, he'd come in on short notice on some days. Like, he was really like their, what is it, jackknife utility man out of the pitching staff, where he was just asked, hey, could you do this? Yeah, I can do that, because he's got that bulldog mentality, which we talked about a lot last year. And like you said, the walks, it's mostly, I'm going to assume, because of the ABS system and the challenge system and stuff like that. That's a lot to get adjusted to. I mean, but it's not to completely excuse it. It was a pretty rough year for him, which if a team isn't like super paying attention, they won't take him. And maybe the Orioles can get by not adding him, because teams will think that he had regressed significantly last season when he really didn't. And they'll be able to keep him in AAA. But yeah, I also think if a team is paying attention, they could see that, you know, if you give him a plan and you let him get adjusted, I think he could play a decent role. He can do multi innings. He could do short stints. He can help you out when needed on a spot start. So I think Ryan Watson will be a major league pitcher. I'm not sure it's with the Orioles. I'm not sure it's in 2024, but yeah, I still like the player.
Yeah, I think you could probably safely leave him unprotected in the major league phase. You leave him on AAA roster, leave him protected in the minor league phase, have him back in Norfolk next year, and kind of hope he gets back back to form, because remember the year before, 2022, he was the Jim Palmer minor league pitcher of the year in this organization. You know, he was kind of another one of these. He was one of the first guys in this organization. This whole, he's a relief prospect, a reliever down at Auburn, joins the org, starts to move up to, you know, double A, and now he's a starter in this organization. And it's like, all right, this is pretty cool. And he can give you six innings. The velo doesn't waver either as he works those five, six inning starts. That stays pretty consistent. I think that's a big positive for him. You know, he is this kind of do-it-all guy, like Bob's talked about, where I do think he can be the one inning, maybe low leverage guy in the major leagues, maybe as early as next year. He could also be in the right organization with the right plan in place. He could be a back of the rotation starter, I think, for some team. You know, hopefully I think he's a guy you want to keep in this organization, but I don't think you're going to protect him to do so. And hopefully he goes, you know, other teams pass on him as well. You know, I hate to say that about the guy, because if you're not going to succeed in Baltimore, like I want, there's so many guys in this organization who I want to see succeed somewhere out there. Watson is definitely one of those guys, but you know, also I want to see him stick around here and see if the Orioles can get a little bit something, because I do think, like exactly like Bob said, you can't blame it all on the ABS system, but I do think that played a major role in it. Or at least some role in kind of his kind of down year this past year. So I want to see him stick around and see if he can turn things around next year.
We'll go to another guy that, if you're a longtime listener, you know he is a favorite of ours. That is Gene Pinto. Pinto was acquired by the Orioles after the 2020 season, along with Garrett Stallings from the Angels in exchange for Jose Iglesias. In 2022, which was his first full season in the minor leagues, Pinto was solid, but at times struggled with command at Aberdeen. He repeated Aberdeen to start the 2023 season and pretty much did what you could have asked of him, which is improve his command. The strikeout numbers were really good. He was promoted to Bowie and was generally solid there, but also had some injury issues last year. Now, prospect reports from outside outlets, a lot of the national outlets that cover the minor leagues, have been pretty positive on Pinto over the last couple of years, but yet the one question mark that always is attached to him is the fastball. A lot of reports like the secondary stuff, but they're not convinced that the fastball is going to be a pitch that can get major league hitters out. And so that's something I want to start with you here, Nick. Pinto, if you're going to look purely on stats, I think there'd be a strong case to protect him. Solid season at AA at age 22, could get to Norfolk relatively early next year. Yet at the same time, we know that there are questions about the stuff and still not a ton of minor league experience. So how do you think the Orioles handle him?
This is a tough one as well, because like I know we were the first one. Let's hype ourselves up here. We were the first ones on the Gene Pinto hype train, and we got it going kind of full steam pretty early on. And he's become one of these guys who, like, I don't care what his prospect status is. I don't care if he's not a prospect anymore. I don't care how bad he gets. Like, if he's on the mound, I'm honestly going to watch him pitch. I legitimately don't think he gets enough credit for the improvements he made this past season. He kind of gets overlooked here. He did a really good job of lowering his walk rate that spiked, uncharacteristically spiked last year. And he did so while improving the strikeout rate. And he got to double A only through, like, I don't even think he cracked 30 innings in double A. You mentioned he was on and off the IL. So I don't think it was anything serious, but don't know exactly what was going on there. I don't think he gets protected or selected by another team. He's an undersized pitcher, you know, doesn't have the big fastball velo, but I'm still going to be a lot more optimistic here and say that, look, the slider is a big league quality pitch. I think the changeup is a pitch that's going to work for him as well. I noted that I want to see access to, like, I wish we had access to his pitch data and we could look at that fastball more, because that is the pitch where if he gets more swing and miss on it at the AA level and AAA level, I feel a lot more confident about Pinto. But regardless, he's got two other solidly above average pitches. He has high ground ball rates. He gets strikeouts. He gets swing and miss. He's lowering the walk rates. I do think he has at minimum a path to the major leagues as a bullpen piece. But we'll see. I think it's the experience thing. I think the injury, the lack of experience, I think that's what kind of keeps him safe and off other teams' radar and his size. So hopefully those are all things irrelevant, I think, to us right now, but to other organizations, they look at it and say, I think we're good. And he sticks around.
All the Orioles fans, who's going to take Felix Bautista's place? Who's the closer next year? That'll be someone the Orioles sign in the offseason. Gene Pinto. I'm torn because I think he's borderline for me. It's between him and the next guy we're going to talk about to be the second person I think will be protected. Just like Vivek said, that slider is just, it's ridiculous. And it seems like it's only getting better. He was striking out so many people this season. And I know he was repeating high A for a lot of it, but he's just refining things. He's still pretty young. I want to go out on a limb and say he's protected because he's my guy. I do think if he's not protected, I don't think there's a great chance he's picked, but I also think he could be a weapon for the Orioles in the second half of 2024 if he's able to put it together, if he can get some consistency with that fastball, maybe tick up 1 or 2 miles per hour. I think he could be a really good right-handed multi-inning reliever. And I don't know if I would personally risk losing him in case he puts it all together for someone next year. I would not be, it's like Zach Pop for me. I would not take the risk because I like the upside.
I think if he is protected, it speaks to the fact that the Orioles feel like they've got some plan in place to get more out of that fastball. And if that would happen and it would work, he probably could be an option for you in the second half of 2024. We touched on the undersized part of Gene Pinto in this conversation. Pinto's listed at 5'11", 175. I don't know that that's really accurate. I want to hear from both of you, because this is something I don't think we've ever talked about on this show. Do either one of you care that much about the height or size of a starting pitcher or a pitcher in general?
Nope. I don't care.
Not at all. Results over height. We know Mike Elias might disagree based on the basketball team that he's brought in over the years. But for me personally, no.
I mean, Pinto was the guy that they targeted in that trade. They went out and got him. I mean, look at Alex Pham. Alex Pham was a small guy as well. He's not 6 feet tall. I don't really know. I know for a fact Gene Pinto is not 5'11". There is no way he's 5'11". But yeah, it's like they're still working at the lower levels of the minor leagues, at least, and they've improved. Like, yeah, he was repeating for Pinto. He was repeating Aberdeen for that first half of the year, but the numbers improved like everywhere across the board. You wanted to see improvements in areas where he kind of fell back a little bit last year. He improved in those areas and he got to Bowie. He performed well and he was like 2.5 years younger than the competition at Bowie. He's only 22 years old. So this is a really young arm. Like maybe that plays a role in it as well. If another team sees that and says, hey, if we can get this 22-year-old pitcher who's had success all the way up through Double A, and we can use him sparingly as, you know, a one-inning guy out of our bullpen this year and develop him in the offseason, he can come back and be a bigger option for us next year. Yeah, that it could be at risk of losing him. So I don't know.
We'll wrap up the Rule 5 segment here with Brandon Young. Opposite end of the height spectrum than Gene Pinto, because Young is listed at 6'6", 210 pounds. A shoulder injury limited him to just 3 outings in 2022, and it took him a while to come back in 2023, but when he came back, he was pretty effective for the Orioles, ultimately pitched across 4 levels, hurling 40 innings. And here's the part that is most impressive to me. In that stretch, he struck out 40 batters and walked only 6, including 23 strikeouts and 25 and a third innings with Bowie, where he did walk 6 batters. Now, given the fact that Young to this point has thrown just under 40 innings at the Double A level, only a year removed from that shoulder injury, chances are that he would start next season back at Double A if he remains in the Orioles system. One thing we know is that before the injury, a lot of people in this organization were high on him. But we also know the Orioles have limited spots right now, and this is a guy who, as I mentioned, probably going to start back at Double A coming off an injury. Teams probably didn't have a lot of chances to see him last year, so Bob, I'll start with you. Do you think that Brandon Young, first off, has a strong case to be protected, and will he be protected?
I personally do think he has a pretty strong case of being protected because, you know, it was scary. His injury was scary. It was not the typical Tommy John you get the surgery, you come back, you're probably going to be fine. I think it was a shoulder thing. We weren't sure. And he was like one of our favorite up and coming rising prospects when he went down. And I just was like, when I hear shoulder, I immediately just think, oh, damn, that's probably going to be it. But he came back and his stuff looked really good. I thought it looked better than the results indicated down the stretch last year. And the two start stretch where he kind of peaked before, I think, maybe getting tired a little bit and regressing and then shut down. August 30th and September 5th, back-to-back starts for AA Bowie. 4 2/3 innings, gave up 1 run, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts. Next time out, 5 innings, 1 run, no walks, 5 strikeouts. I still think there's something there. I think this stuff is really good, and I still think he has starter potential in the major leagues. If he ever gets there, I don't know. And I think if you do move him to a relief role, I think the stuff will play up even more, as we know. And with his height, and his stuff and his like interesting angle that he comes in from, I think there's something there. That's why I'm kind of between him and Pinto to be that second guy, I think, that will be protected. But I would not be shocked if Brandon Young is protected next Wednesday.
Yeah, the injury for me is just the injury. Like, he missed more than a calendar year, probably, I think, if I remember correctly, of pitching. And had just 40 innings this season. That was a spread across, you know, 4 levels. He worked his way back. You know, I don't know if we know 100% sure exactly what the injury was, but it does seem like it was the shoulder injury. And, you know, it's not like Tommy John surgery, where teams like the Orioles, we've seen the Orioles be super aggressive with guys who just had Tommy John surgery. Trey Magoz, we just talked about. They just signed that guy to a 2-year minor league deal. I don't know what his name is, but they just he's not going to pitch until, like, what, midway through the season anyway, why they gave him the 2-year deal. The Orioles, if they like a guy, they're going to go after him with this Tommy John surgery. But the shoulder stuff is definitely hesitant, and we had no idea where he was. I remember texting you guys and being like, do we know anything about Brandon Young? Because somebody like said something on Twitter, and I'm like, yeah, we still don't know. And then I think it was like the next day or 2 days later, it was like Brandon Young's been assigned to the FCL. And I was like, all right, I guess he's back. That was cool. So it was good to see him back on the mound, knowing like he's still alive. Remember when he was on the show, he doesn't, I don't know if he has a cell phone yet. He has the cell phone, but he uses the flip phone and he doesn't have social media. So he's a guy, it's like, where's Brandon Young? We had no idea. And then he comes out, and I don't know if it was one of those starts, but I feel like I remember somebody mentioning in a stadium gun reading of like 98 or 99 for Brandon Young at one point last year. Again, secondhand stadium gun information there, but still, regardless, he's throwing in the upper 90s. And Zach mentioned the numbers, 40 innings, just 6 walks. Like, you missed more than a calendar year being on the mound, and you're throwing upper 90s and not walking guys already. That's pretty huge. Like, I think that's at least a bold case for him. He sticks in this organization. I don't think they protect him, though. I think my two guys, I'm going just two guys overall, and I'm thinking I'm going with Mago and Haskin probably, just because, but I could be sold either way, either on the Haskin one, but
it's Miguel and Pinto for me is my final prediction.
I'm going to agree with Nick and go with Miguel and Haskin. Before we move on completely, though, if it was your preference, not your prediction, your preference, although I think Bob's prediction and preference line up, if it's your preference, who are the two?
My preference is probably going to be... This is a tough one as well. I'm going to say Mago, the lefty with the firepower. I think he can be a valuable asset. I'm going to say Mago and probably Brnovich, just because I think he's a guy who just a lot of people kind of underestimate, and he's proven it along the way. So I'd probably say those two guys.
My preference is the 40-man roster rule change, 50-man roster. get some more of these guys on here. But yeah, probably my prediction and preferred are pretty similar.
Yeah. Are there any, I don't know, you guys, if you thought about this, but any other pitchers specifically that, because we know the hitters list, but any other pitchers that you guys are like maybe super long odds, like less than 1% shot, but there's at least a conversation being had in the front office, even just for a couple of minutes. Like, You got guys like Houston Roth, Connor Gillespie, Jake Lyons, Morgan McSweeney, Hoffman, Connor Loprich, Tyler Burch, Jensen Elliott. I picked two, but I don't know if you guys ever thought about anybody else before we wrap up.
Nolan Hoffman, for me, could be like that sneaky Darren O'Day. I don't know if he's that level, but I think just because he's a different approach than the guys we have currently. He's a different arm angle, obviously, different. I don't know, like that picture of the Rays, how they have like a guy with each arm slot. I think he could be a different one of them. So I'll say Hoffman for me.
I would go Cade Stroud, just because you can see really overpowering bullpen stuff from him. And we know from what John Mioli has written in the past, I think in his newsletter, and I think he's written about a little bit of the banner too. The pitch data on Stroud apparently is really good. 67 strikeouts and 55 in the third innings last year. The walks are a real issue with him, but the Orioles have shown that they're not afraid to take a chance on a guy with overpowering stuff but bad command.
If you break down Stroud's numbers too, he had some really great stretches and improvements along the way. I'm going to throw out a name that my eyes kept wandering back to. And again, this is super long odds. This is like less than 1% shot here. But if there's a guy who I think, where did that come from? And they end up protecting. I'm going to throw out the name Nick Richmond, just because I think he's performed well since he joined the org. The numbers in Bowie don't look great, but if you take out two of his like early performances after he got promoted when he was adjusting to AA, his numbers look completely different. That's just one more name that I'm thinking there is at least a conversation had probably there.
I was ready to come into this episode predicting Wanda Centrales was going to be added to the 40-man, and then he became a minor league free agent. So maybe, and I'm hoping they can bring him back somehow, but man, I just wanted to see Wanda Centrales in an Orioles uniform at the major leagues.
Yeah, we'll go very quickly now and discuss the Orioles' remaining award season. Gunnar Henderson is a finalist for American League Rookie of the Year. Brandon Hyde is a finalist for American League Manager of the Year. But we also have three Orioles up for Silver Slugger Awards. They are Adley Rutschman, a catcher, Gunnar Henderson, who is slotted into utility spot, and Anthony Santander. So, Bob, I'll start with you. How do we see the remainder of award season playing out in Birdland?
I don't even know how they figure out Silver Slugger. So I'll say Adley wins a Silver Slugger. Who's up against Gunnar in utility? Do you know offhand? Or you can...
I'll double check right now, but I know that Gunnar's numbers were pretty far above most of those guys.
It's, all right. Yeah. It's Brandon Drury, Isak Paredes, and Gunnar, I think that's, and Whit Merrifield, and his 700 OPS. What? Get out of here.
Adley and Gunnar, Silver Sluggers in my mind, then. Not sure Santander is going to be able to get there, but would be cool. I think Gunner's obviously is a lock for Rookie of the Year. Brandon Hyde should be a lock, but I think MLB spoiled their own results, and we think Bruce Boshi is going to win over him, which is kind of ridiculous. But, yeah, I don't really care. We were talking about this before the show started, about awards very much other than Rookie of the Year, because the Orioles will get that extra first-round pick, basically, and we'll have three of the first, 34 picks next year, which will be fun.
Yeah, there's Tony Tater still there on that list, and people still want to trade him, but whatever. He won't win it, but like Julio had a great year. Adolis Garcia is on that list, and Adolis Garcia has become just an animal. I think I don't see him winning it. Adley, I think, has a real chance, unless I don't either know like how Silver Sluggers are selected. If it's voting, like who votes for it, I don't know either. But as long as the decision is based solely on like home runs, I think Cal Raleigh had like 30 something home runs or whatever. I think Adley has a chance, and I do think Gunnar wins it because his numbers, Drury's numbers, and Paredes's numbers all look kind of similar. But Gunnar's got the Rookie of the Year hype, so maybe that plays a role in it. But Drury is also, if I'm looking at this list right, Drury is also nominated at second base and utility. So they could probably go Marcus Semien at second base and then give Drury the utility. This is why I hate awards. They're dumb. I'm gonna say Adley takes a Silver Slugger, Gunner gets one, and Gunner gets Rookie of the Year, and we get the extra draft pick and another guy to talk about next year.
Oh, and I think it was announced the Orioles get the 24th pick in next year's draft. They actually picked before the Dodgers because of revenue sharing or something like that.
As for awards, if Whit Merrifield beats Gunnar Henderson, I'm going to go on such a long tangent on next week's show, or whenever the next show is after those awards are announced, that you're either going to be really entertained, or when you listen to it later on, you're just going to fast forward through the entire thing. Other than that, yeah, Brandon Drury beats Gunnar Henderson. That's fine. I would personally take Gunnar. But if Drury wins over him, it's understandable.
If Whit Merrifield wins over Gunnar, I'm getting vaccinated. That's it.
You're not going to get ready to a better podcast before you do that?
Oh, yeah. Well, then it depends on the podcast. Depends on the podcast.
We'll trade you the fan graphs. How's that sound?
I'll think about it.
Well, stay tuned to next week's episode where we find out, did we trade Bob to another podcast? But in all seriousness, all three of us will be back next week. We will have more Orioles coverage for you. In the meantime, you can check us out on X, Instagram, Facebook, and on TikTok, where we now have a few videos up. So you're going to want to check those out. And while you're browsing around the internet, be sure to head over to BaltimoreSportsAndLife.com to read all the latest coverage on the Orioles, Ravens, college sports, and more. And while you're there, hop on the message board and join the discussion with fellow readers of BSL as well as contributors to the site. For Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens, this is Zach Spedden. You've been listening to On the Verge.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains May 2nd through the 12th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.